The chapter heading in Canto 1, Chapter 9 is The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev. So I'm going to read the first verse and then we'll discuss a little bit. The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev in the presence of Lord Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll just read the first verse and translation in purport.
Suta uvacha iti bita praja drothat sarva dharma vivitsaya tato vinashat vinashayam pragat yatra deva vrato patet.
Because his name was Deva Vrata before it became Bhishma Dev. Translation. Suta Goswami said, being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre. Is this on?
Yes.
There, Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows, about to pass away. Purport. In this ninth chapter, as it is willed by Lord Sri Krishna, Bhishma Dev will impart instructions to Maharaj Yudhisthira on the subject of occupational duties. Bhishma Dev will also offer his last prayer to the Lord on the verge of passing away from this mortal world and thus become liberated from the bondage of further material entanglements. Bhishma Dev was endowed with the power of leaving his material body at will and lying down on the bed of arrows was his own choice. This passing away of the great warrior attracted the attention of all the contemporary elites, and all of them assembled there to show their feelings of love, respect, and affection for the great soul. So, before going forward, probably just going to cover this one verse and discuss the life of Grandfather Bhishma first. But a little appreciation of the distinction between the Bhagavatam and Mahabharata. I just spent a very invigorating, fully engaging weekend in Seattle discussing the invocation verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Maybe some of you heard some of that online because there was live stream. And the first session was dedicated to asking the question and then describing, what is the Srimad Bhagavatam? And the Bhagavatam itself, Vyasadeva writes that this Srimad Bhagavatam is a description of Paradharma, distinct from the other kinds. Paradharma is the transcendental position of spiritual perfection. Within the Vedas, there's a vast array according to the disposition in the modes of nature and the position of faith that an individual has based upon their desire to attain something worldly or otherworldly, there are divisions within the Vedas. Simply, karmakanda, jnanakanda, upasanakanda. And in addition, there is transcendental literature. Srimad Bhagavatam is that transcendental literature exclusively. And the emphasis of Srimad Bhagavatam, the emphasis of Paradharma, is to achieve unmixed love and devotion for the personality of Godhead. And the means to achieve that is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. The other forms of Dharma are according to the faith and the position of the within the modes of nature of the people who have, they're religious and they have some regard for the supreme and accept the codes of Dharma as given by the Vedas themselves. But they have, there's mix. Sakama, Karma Yoga, Nishkam Karma Yoga. There's so many varieties. Gyan Yoga, Karma Mishra Bhakti, Gyan Mishra Bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti. There's lots of different teachings, and those teachings resonate according to the faith of the adherent. So Mahabharata, according to Garuda Purana, the essence of Mahabharata is presented within the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll give an example of that. Two examples. Well, three examples. One example is, according to Mahabharata, what happened to the Pandavas when it was time for them to leave this world? What happened in Mahabharata? The Pandavas had to see hell, yes? And then what happened? They went to heaven because they're so pious. Srimad Bhagavatam says that after Krishna left this earth, the Pandavas, being eternal associates of Krishna, in their self-same bodies, they attained the spiritual realm. Not heaven, but the spiritual realm, the kingdom of God, because they're always with Krishna. Now, the message of Mahabharata is to teach good, and you know, the force of good against the force of evil, and the force of virtue always is victorious, even though it may look like for some time the powers of the asuras and the duskritis, they're going to prevail, and it seems very difficult for the godly, but the godly are protected, and eventually virtue prevails. So in this world, abide by virtue. It's teaching virtue. And what's the difference? What is, in which case is there virtue? In which case is there not virtue? Like a nice example of this is in the description of the meeting of Yudhisthira with the Yaksha, the form or disguised form of Yamaraj, who came as a Yaksha, a troll coming out of the lake, and challenged Yudhisthira to answer his questions before he could drink water from the lake. And many questions, but one of the questions was, how does one discern what is virtue? Because there's complexity in the laws that say this is virtue and that's virtue. This is sinful, and that's sinful, and how does one sort it out? What's the final way that it's all sorted out? And Yudhisthira's answer is, it's true, it's very complex. And sometimes it's not possible. Humanly, it's not possible to sort it all out. Therefore, one should follow the path of the Mahajans. Mahajano yena katasa panta. Because they have the qualification to discern, whereas we may not have the qualification to discern, especially in situations that are complex. So we should follow the Mahajans. Now, in the Bhagavatam, and then in the Mahabharata, the situation, I'm going to describe something about, as this class, that comes from Mahabharata Adiparva. It says where Bhishma came from, and it says where Bhishma goes to. It says that Bhishma Dev was a Vasu. He was one of the eight Vasus. Well, here's some detail. Don't squint. You'll see it in just a moment. And after being Bhishma Dev for his lifetime as one of the Vasus, he then went back to the realm of the Vasus, the demigods. He achieved heaven. The Bhagavatam version, in the purports, Prabhupada also speaks about Bhishma Dev as a Vasu, but he achieved unalloyed devotion. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam jachantante kalevaram. At the end, he was absorbed exclusively in Krishna. In fact, his life was exclusively absorbed in Krishna. It's discussed in this chapter, chapter 9. And so what was the destination of Bhishma Dev after he left his body? He went to Krishna. So now, what do you do when you hear something over here and something over here, and they don't sound the same? That's kind of unusual. Maybe I'm starting right off at the top of the discussion with confusing you. But it's not for confusing. It's for establishing clarity. The pranas themselves, going back to the invocation verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, the pranas themselves say, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the monarch amongst all the Puranas. It's the Garuda Purana speaks of it as the Amala Purana. The Bhagavatam also speaks of it as the Amala Purana. What does that mean? Amala, spotless. Spotless is in contrast with mixed, just like the modes of nature. The modes of nature are three: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And we're at whichever one of the modes is prominent, the others, let's say, ignorance is prominent. There's some goodness, and there's some passion, but ignorance is prominent. Or goodness is prominent, but there's some ignorance and some passion. And the modes are competing for supremacy. Even good people will sometimes become angry. Even good people will sometimes do something hurtful. But prominent is the mode of goodness. And there's a situation where there's unmixed goodness. That's what's transcendental, or amala, spotless, shuddha, sattva. I met three devotees in Seattle, three wives of different devotees, and one, two, three, they're all shuddha, shuddha, shuddha. Shuddha means pure. Pure meaning unmixed. Just like paradharma, the supreme, or unmixed with, there's no contact of the modes of nature. No contact with the modes of nature. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is the conclusive evidence. That's what I'm just presenting here. If there are different opinions, which opinion do you select? Or different voices that say, you know, something. 2 plus 2 is 5, and 2 plus 2 is 3, and 2 plus 2 is 4. How do I know? There's means of knowing things. There's pramana. The Vedas are the best means of knowing things, and amongst the Vedas, that which is spotless, which is a long discussion, but the best is that which is unmixed. And so, the Srimad Bhagavatam's conclusion is the conclusion that finally we accept. So, having said that, I'm going to describe some things about Bhishma Dev that come from Mahabharata, where it describes him as a Vasu. So, what are some of the things that we know about Bhishma Dev? One of them I've, well, indirectly already mentioned. Bhishma Dev was a Mahajan. This is a verse taken from Yamaraj himself describing to the Yamadutas there are 12 Mahajans and their names, Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapila, Manu, Prahlada, Janaka, Bhishmo, or Bhishma Dev, Grandfather Bhishma, Balir, Vyasakir, and Vayam, that's himself. They're the Mahajans, those who know the real principles of religion, the final, conclusive, they're the authorities. So Bhishma Dev is one of them. Bhishma Dev in Mahabharata is described as a Vasu. And in one purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada presents the position of who are the Vasus. There's not a lot described about them, but the indication is that 33 million demigods and three categories are mentioned. There is the sons of Aditi, or the Adityas. Then there's the Vasus, and there's the Rudras. And then further, there are eight principal Vasus. Agni, Prithvi, Vayu, Antariksha, Aditya, Chandra or Chandrama, Nakshatra, and Dhyo. So, Dhyo, before Bhishma Dev became Bhishma Dev, he was Dhyo, one of the eight Vasus. And the Mahabharata describes in Adi Parva that the eight Vasus were one time visiting Vashishta. And when visiting Vashishta, they brought their wives. And Dhyo was the eldest of the eight Vasus, and his wife saw the cow of Vashishta, the Kamadenu cow. And she wanted the cow. She told her husband, "Moo, I want the cow." And in the heavenly realm, part of the function of the Vasus is they're warriors, they're protectors of the heavenly kingdom. So they're very powerful, Kshatriya-like demigods. And so there's some pride. And Dhyo was exhibiting his pride. So he told his seven brothers, "You engage Vashishta in conversation, distract him while I steal the cow." But Vashishta wasn't, you know, an ordinary personality. He knew exactly what was going on. And as the cow was being taken, he cursed all the eight brothers for their sinful deed of stealing the property of a brahmana. And they pleaded with him, "Please give us some leniency. We did the wrong thing, but please be lenient upon us." So he said, "All right, I'll be lenient." The curse was that they would leave the heavenly planets and take birth on earth. And then he leniently said, the seven brothers who were accomplices of Dhyo, as soon as they take birth on earth, immediately after their birth, they'll leave that earthly body and come back to their Vasu position in the heavenly realm. But this one, the elder brother Dyo, who actually did the stealing and actually put the other brothers up to it, he'll take birth and stay for a long time. He'll be known on earth as a great personality, a great warrior, a great military man, but he'll have to stay on earth for a long time. So, Dyo later became Bhishma Dev. Adi Parva goes on to describe how he took birth on earth was as follows. There was a great king named Maha Abhishek. And he, in the course of his life, lived such a virtuous life that he attained the heavenly realm. And while in the heavenly realm, there was an assembly that he was invited to attend in Brahmaloka. And while attending that assembly in Brahmaloka, Ganges personified was also attending the assembly. And because it is was a very pleasant atmosphere with a blowing of a pleasant breeze, the clothing of Ganga was moved by the blowing of the wind, and Maha Abhishek was staring at her body, and Ganga returned the glance knowingly of Maha Abhishek, who was staring at her body, and Brahma witnessed the whole thing. So he cursed them both. Then you should leave the heavenly realm and take birth on earth. So taking birth on earth in a human form of life isn't a big deal. From the demigod perspective, it's a curse. Ganga pleaded forgiveness from Lord Brahma, who said, "Very well, you stay on earth for a short time. The Vasus who are to return will be born as your sons. After their decease, the son that has to remain, you will train him for some time, and then you can return to your heavenly position." So, Ganga took her birth on earth. This is the Mahabharata narration, Adi Parva. And one fine day, as Ganga was moving about through the forest, she saw one king, Pratipa, who was engaged in tapasya. And very boldly, while he was sitting, engaging his tapasya, Ganga sat down on his lap, on his right thigh, and said, "You're a very attractive king. I need some protection. Would you accept me as your wife? I'll become your queen." And the king replied, "The right thigh is meant for the daughter-in-law. So you'll become my daughter-in-law in course of time. It is very clear. The sign is there." And sure enough, King Pratipa, after some time, had one son. And his son's name was Santanu. So as Santanu grew up and was engaged in his virtuous activity and his chivalrous activity, one time he was passing through the forest and he saw a very heavenly, beautiful woman. Santanu at the time was not married and considered that this very, very beautiful woman would make a very suitable wife. So he didn't waste any time. He directly spoke to her, "Who are you? And you're so, I've never seen a woman of such beauty like you. And I'm the king of all the land, and I would like you to accept the position of being my wife." So she agreed. She agreed on a condition. And the condition was that you'll never stop me in anything that I wish to do. You'll never say no. What a great vow for marriage, from a wife to a husband. "I'll never say no, whatever you want. I'll never speak against anything that you want." Whoa, whoa, whoa. So, the king agreed. And after some time, a son was born. And just after the son was born, Ganga took the son and drowned the son in the river. Because she knew this is so that the Vasus could return to their heavenly position. And Santanu kept his promise. He didn't say anything. And this happened 6 other times. And when it finally came to the 7th, the 8th time, he stopped her. Ganga, please, let's keep this one son. And she said, you made the promise that you would never object to anything I wanted to do, and now you've objected, so I'm leaving. And she not only left, but she left with the son. And she remained in the forest. Again, this is Mahabharata Adiparva describing. She remained in the forest and raised the child. She named him Devavrata. And she, along with Vashishta and Parashuram, trained Devavrata. Parashuram, in particular, trained him in all the military skills, just as later on Parashuram trained who? Drona. So, as he grew up as a young boy, he became very accomplished. And one fine day, the king, Santanu, saw this young man in the middle of the Ganga reaching out his arms and stopping the Ganga from flowing like a human dam. And he was amazed. He never saw anything, such a powerful person. Who can do that? So he quickly approached the boy, and this boy suddenly disappeared. And he had this intuitive understanding. This is my son. 32 years had passed where the training of Devavrata had gone on. So he then prayed to Ganga, please return my son. Being compassionate, Ganga came and presented Devavrata to Santanu, said, here, this is your son. And she disappeared, just as suddenly as she had appeared. So now the son, Devavrata, and the father, Santanu, are united. And because Santanu saw the exceptional qualification of Devavrata, he anointed him as prince regent. He was to become the successor king. It was formalized in ceremony. And as fate would have it, one day he was traveling along the side of the river and smelled this heavenly fragrance coming from the area of the river. And he followed, and it was coming from the body of a woman, Satyavati. So he saw the beautiful Satyavati and inquired about her. Who is her father, and is she married? And found out that she's not married, so he went to the father and requested the father of Satyavati, I'm the king of the entire land, and I'm requesting the hand of your daughter in marriage. And he said, no. And Santanu said, why? I'm the king. You're a fisherman, and I'm asking to marry your daughter. He said, because my daughter is going to have as a son the successor king. And you already have a son, Bhishma Dev, or Devavrata. Devavrata. And he's already prince regent, so you can't marry my daughter. And Santanu was, woo, woo, woo. He was feeling the blues. He wished to marry. He had fallen in love. He wished to marry Satyavati. And Satyavati wished to marry him. So he went back to the palace and was morose. He couldn't do his duties, and he's moping around the palace, and everyone understood he's not his normal self. And very quickly, Devavrata inquired, what happened to my father? And he understood what happened, he went to meet the fisherman and requested the fisherman to give the hand of his daughter in marriage to the king, Santanu, to his father. And the fisherman declined. He said, because my daughter, Satyavati, Parashuram had given her a benediction that her son would become the king. So Bhishma Dev said, very well, I'm the prince regent. I renounce the position of being king. So now your daughter can marry Santanu and her daughter can become king. And he said, almost, but not quite. Not good enough. Because you're the firstborn son. If you marry and you have a son, then your son will become king. So Bhishma Dev then said, very well, I won't marry. I remain a brahmachari my whole life. And so that then it won't be possible for me to have a son. So then the fisherman said, very well, my daughter can marry your father. So from that time, he was no longer known as Devavrata, he was known as Bhishma Dev. Bhishma, who took a strong vow. Bhishma. That's the meaning of his name. Bhishma Deva. So that's mentioned here in this purport of text number one. And the marriage between Satyavati and Santanu took place. And so Bhishma Dev, he had all the qualification of a king. He had the personality of a king, he had the skill of the king, he had the demeanor of a king, he had the stature of a king, except he wasn't the king. So he took care of his younger brothers. Chitrangada was the elder, and Vichitravirya was the younger of the two brothers, the daughters of Satyavati and Santanu. And he trained them. So they became great fighters and great personalities. Anyway, the narration goes on. It ends up, they both died before they produced sons. So Satyavati wished that Bhishma Dev father children by the wives of their deceased husband. Whoops, is that how you say it? Their husbands were deceased and they are now left without a husband. And if the brother of a woman produces the child, this is one of the injunctions in this age of Kali that is not to be done, but in previous ages it was one of the things that was done. If a woman could not produce a child with her husband, then one of the brothers may produce a child with the woman. So Bhishma Dev refused. He said, I've taken a vow. I can't break a vow. And she gave an argument that said, well, the vow was made for me and now I release you of the vow. And you're a great personality. You understand the need for the protection of citizens and there must be a king to give protection to the citizens. So place this principle above your vow. He said, I can't place any principle above my vow. He said that the sun may stop shining and the wind may stop blowing and the water may stop being wet, but I'm not going to break my vow. And then he started explaining to her the principles of the will of providence. Don't you see? The very qualified brothers. Your sons were so qualified. But who was there as powerful as Chitrangada? There was nobody. He would have been an excellent king. But here comes a Gandharva with the name Chitrangada and challenges your son. And he was more powerful because he was a demigod. And Chitrangada was killed. And similarly, Vichitravirya and the whole circumstance of his demise. There's a plan of the Supreme. So just accept the plan of the Supreme. Don't try to do a workaround around God. There's a plan of the Supreme. But I know your good intentions, so I have another suggestion. You have another son besides me. And who was that other son besides Bhishma Dev, who was not her son, but stepson, and Chitrangada and Vichitravirya, Vyasadeva. Because before she was married, Parashara Muni, through Satyavati, produced Vyasadeva. So call Vyasadeva. And he didn't take a vow like this. He's a householder. And he can produce children with Ambika and Ambalika. So the sons were born, Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. And then so many other things happened. Mahabharata happened. And the scene that we're finding here in the beginning part, because it's where the entry verse into this ninth chapter is, the Kurukshetra battle is over. And as was the will of Krishna, the Kauravas, headed by Duryodhana and his 99 other brothers, were all destroyed. And all their cronies, all of their associates and their ministers and everybody was destroyed except for Bhishma Dev. Because Bhishma Dev, when he took this vow and brought Satyavati to the royal palace to become his queen, Santana was also an extremely powerful personality. He gave this benediction to his son that you will not have to die unless you so desire. If you choose, you may give up your body. And otherwise, nothing can kill you. Nothing can stop you. You can carry on as long as you like. He became old, but he had that strength, which is described here also in this purport. He could live as long as he wished, and when he wished, he could give up his body. The passing of Grandfather Bhishma, for those of you that have read Lilamrita, Prabhupada Lilamrita, you'll find a description that's sounds very much like the passing of Grandfather Bhishma. Prabhupada had created a situation in his life where there were many things that weren't working in his body without detailing them. There were he had one kidney that didn't work at all and another kidney that was working half. And that's, You it's painful. The body fills with uric acid because, just like our temple devotee that has this problem, same problem. He's have to undergo surgery. And anyway, not easy. Prabhupada had that problem, and some other physical problems. But he, because he was so transcendental, I just had a conversation yesterday with Malati, who was saying, as my body is getting older, and those whose bodies are getting older, and pushing in the 60s, heading for 70. 70 is when Prabhupada left India and came to America. And many of us who are our GBC members were, you know, early 60s or mid 60s or later 60s. And, you know, a lot of things don't work. And it's, you know, but what Prabhupada did was it started at the age of 70. Yeah, inconceivable what he did. The pace at which he lived and everything. The volume of what he did, the little that he slept, the schedule that he kept, just like 50 persons in one person. I mean, even 50, you can't get 50 persons to do what he did. Anyway, you know, write a book. How long did it take to write something? You know, some assignment or work or some assignment at school, write a paper and write a Vyasa Puja offering. How long does it take? And then you have this, you know, 60 volumes. He didn't complete all of the Bhagavatam 60 volumes, but he completed most of them and so many other publications, 17 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Just the writing part alone. Anyway, without going, you know, his accomplishments were just incredible. But at the final stage, he just stopped eating. And there's these very delicate exchanges where they would bring things for Prabhupada to eat and he would not eat. And they would say, you can't maintain your life if you don't eat. And he wouldn't eat. It was like he was choosing to leave. And it's just this pleading with Prabhupada, don't leave us. Please take something. And, you know, whatever Krishna wants. Then this momentous situation where he agreed to eat something. Everyone celebrated. Yeah, he's right. And those that were around the whole situation, it was as if it was Grandfather Bhishma who could stay if he wanted to stay or leave if he wanted to leave. It was Krishna had given him that license or that privilege or that prerogative. And the scene with Grandfather Bhishma, similarly, he could stay or leave as he was inclined. And so the scene, the opening scene in this first verse is, well, the next verse doesn't have a report. I'll read the next couple of verses. All these great personalities had assembled. At that time, all his brothers, that's Yudhisthira's brothers, followed him on beautiful chariots drawn by first-class horses decorated with gold ornaments. With them were Vyas, and because Vyas is his brother, and rishis like Domya, the learned priest of the Pandavas, and others. O great sage among the Brahmanas, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, also followed, seated on a chariot with Arjuna. Thus King Yudhisthira appeared very aristocratic, like Kuvera, surrounded by his companions, the Guyakas. Oh, Kuvera's opulent. Somehow treasures become opulent. I don't know how that happens, but at least in the heavenly realm, Kuvera's mega opulent. And his associates, the Guyakas, are similarly opulent. So it was done purposefully by the Pandavas, because they knew what Grandfather Bhishma wanted. Just as Duryodhana knew what Grandfather Bhishma wanted, He wanted the Pandavas to be victorious. He wanted the Pandavas to regain the throne. He wanted that. Although he fought on the side of Duryodhana, he did so on a religious principle because he was being maintained by the royal family. So he was obliged by religious principle. Not just by social convention, but by religious principle. But he wanted the Pandavas to be restored in the throne. And when so they came to enliven, to show, it's happened. Not only the battle is over, but Yudhisthira is now the king. The Pandavas have regained the throne. And the royal opulence is now fully in their hand. So deliberately they came in regal attire and all pomp and splendor and opulence to enthuse and enliven Grandfather Bhishma. Here's a chart. I didn't make this chart, so I can't describe it so well. So here's Vasishtha and the line from Vasishtha, Parashara Muni. And King Bharadhasti Kuru Santanu married Satyavati and also Ganga. And this Bhishma from Ganga, Vichitavirya and Chitrangada from Satyavati. And Vichitavirya married Ambika and Ambalika. And then the descendants from Ambika and Ambalika indicated here. So this is the scene. Bhishma, Dev lying, look a little relaxed there, but lying on a bed of arrows. And different depictions of the scene. And the associates coming to surround Grandfather Bhishma because he was very thirsty. Arjuna knew the art. He fired an arrow in the ground and a water fountain came to quench the thirst of Bhishma Dev. So, to be continued, we're going to hear more from Srimad Bhagavatam about the passing away of Grandfather Bhishma. This is just to help set the scene. Like chapter 1 of Bhagavad Gita, setting the scene. Any discussion? Yes?
Is there any significance for the bed of arrows?
Is there any significance?
Yeah, why I think the arrow bed was created by Arjuna.
Yeah, so is there a significance to it? I don't know what your question means.
I'm just asking.
His body, it's very simple. I don't know if there's like any metaphorical implication to it. Rather, he should have been dead. His body was so riddled with arrows through and through that any ordinary person is gone. Like, kaput. Finished. But Grandfather Bhishma wasn't ready to give up his body yet, so he didn't give up his body yet. So many arrows, he was just lying on arrows. Finished. That's the meaning. Significance. His body was finished, and he was still inhabiting his body because he could give up his body at will, and he had a will. He wanted to see Krishna. So Krishna came. That's the significance. A commentary or Mahabharata?
Mahabharata.
Okay.
That one.
Uh-oh. Go ahead.
That one, Bhishma Dev was lying in the battlefield, and then Pandavas visited them.
Yeah.
Then by the Bhishma request Arjuna, and then he created a bed with arrows, and he was lying on it.
No.
Seven days he was there.
Sorry. It's not he caressed a bed of arrows that Arjuna created. Rather, his body was riddled with arrows. Yes?
I think he was lying on the arrow, but his head was down. Then he asked Arjuna, that I'm not feeling comfortable.
I'm not feeling comfortable.
So then I put an arrow on his head. And then
well,
he was lying down over there for 7 days.
Okay. I don't know which version of Mahabharata you read. I don't know which version of Mahabharata you read. I do know that there's many different versions of Mahabharata, as there are many different versions of Ramayana. In the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Shukadeva Goswami begins to speak the pastimes of Ramachandra, he says to Maharaj Parikshit, there's so many versions about Ram's pastimes. I'm only going to speak from the authorized ones. So, which version of Mahabharata you read, and which version of Mahabharata you read, I don't know.
I have another question.
Okay.
Among Pandavas, who died first?
According to Srimad Bhagavatam, they didn't. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, I could read the verse to you if you like, but according to Srimad Bhagavatam, they left this planet in their self-same body because their body had become spiritualized and they attained the spiritual realm in their self-same body. Now, that's not what Mahabharata says, as I described in the very beginning. So, I don't know, according to Mahabharata, which of them left the world first and which one left last. I could look it up. I don't mind looking it up. And I would look, there's a Ganguly version of Mahabharata that Prabhupada recommended when the devotees asked what's a version that we can read, because there's so many versions. And some of them are bona fide and some of them are not bona fide. So I can go to the trouble and look it up, but right now I don't know. According to the Ganguly version of Mahabharata, which of the Pandavas went first and which went last? I'll look it up.
Because in Ramayana, if all brothers, Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, Shatrughan, they immerse in the water. And as I have seen in the picture, that
seen in the picture is something that I don't go for.
And they were in incarnation of Vishnu.
Yes.
In different times.
Well, not just there are in the spiritual world, in the Vaikuntha realm, there are Vasudeva, Sankarsan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha, and those four, the Chaturvyuha, appeared as Ram, Bharat, Lakshman, and Shatrughna. As in the spiritual world, so here, just performing the Leela of Ramchandra, Ramayan. So, they're all Vishnu Tattva, they're not living entities. And let me ask you the question. Does Vishnu die?
Vishnu?
Yes. Does Vishnu die?
Ram?
Now, just answer the one question. Does Vishnu die?
I don't know.
Okay, that's a good answer. That's an honest answer. And I'll answer the question. Vishnu not only doesn't die, he's the source of all jivas. So, when he performs a lila, he may have his janma. It's a lila. And he may have his departure, pastime. It's also a lila. But Vishnu doesn't die, and Vishnu isn't born. Just as Krishna isn't. He has his lila.
Yeah.
He doesn't drown.
Ram was a part of Vishnu. Krishna was a part of Vishnu in different periods.
Okay, however you like to think of Ram as a part of Vishnu and Krishna as a part of Vishnu, Vishnu doesn't die. So, from Ramayana, how Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna leave, it's a Leela, whatever it is. My understanding of how they left is they, along with their entire Sangha, except for Hanuman, they just ascended to Vaikuntha. He was exhibiting his pastimes on earth to attract the hearts and the minds of the conditioned souls on earth to Vaikuntha. And they went with him to Vaikuntha. They became attracted, and he went and they went with him. Except he had some service for Hanuman to do here. Something else? Yes? Well, there's a parallel. What I said was there's a parallel. That there's and some of the portions of what's in Mahabharata is not exactly the same as what's in Srimad Bhagavatam. And that Bhagavatam is the final authority. It's just like, you know, different levels of courts. And when you get to the Supreme Court, that's it. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it's the Supreme Court. Okay? That's what I was saying at the beginning. Anything else?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Okay, we're done. Yes?
I think you just want to understand my understanding is correct or not. So you are saying, as per Bhagavatam, like Pandavas, they are actually eternal associates of Krishna.
Yes.
Whereas in Mahabharata, you said they happen to see hell and they happen to see him.
So then they return to heaven. Because of their pious activities, they ascended into heaven. So the message of the two is not exactly the same message. Virtue above vice. Piety above impiety. Theistic conduct above the position of atheistic conduct. And you abide by the truth. Just like Bhishma Dev's great vow. He said to Satyavati, I will never depart from truth. The sun may stop shining. The wind may stop blowing. Water may stop being wet. I will never depart from truth. So, virtue is the path to follow. The path of adhering to the truth. And the Bhagavatam is being fixed upon the personality of Godhead and unalloyed devotion, no matter what. So, the modes of nature and transcendence. Now, certainly in Mahabharata, devotion to Krishna is strong. But the manner in which it's portrayed is not the same as the manner in which it's portrayed in Srimad Bhagavatam. All right? Okay. Hare Krishna. To be continued.